Welcome to the Insight Out Show. I'm Devin Almonte. Thanks for being here today. I hope you are having a great week. My stepson is coming into town today. He'll be here for a few days. We haven't seen him for a while. He just graduated from college last year, and so he's getting ready at the end of the month to head to France. He took a teaching job there. He'll be teaching English. So excited for him. Hard to believe because he seems still like a kid to me. I've known him since he was three, and now he's an adult. He's all grown. If you could pray for our visit here for the next few days, that would be appreciated. And of course, for his time out of the country, for him to see Christ show up in his life in all the places and spaces, as I like to say. All right. Well, I've got the now new usual for today. This is a fairly new edition of the Insight Out podcast where we bring some stories to you on Thursdays, just to recap what's been going on this week, along with our anchor point, our devotional to keep us encouraged. And so I will take you to my backyard from years ago when I had these beautiful hydrangeas full of color and life. However, I don't have a green thumb. I'll tell you what happened. And then we're going to look at something that has been trending and increasing, and that is menodivorce. Sounds like menopause, but it's related to divorce. There's a combination of the two there, so we'll see what that's about. And would you pay $10,000 to take a college course on how to steal? I believe there's still a week left to add or drop the course if you're interested. Maybe they can also explain the $10,000 price tag. And then we'll head to Florida, where there is some news about what's happening with the vaccines. There's some effort being made to roll back every vaccine mandate, and that's stirring up quite a lot of conversations online. Lots to cover here. Hope it's helpful. And I promise it all ties back to what God has to say about how we live our lives in this ever increasingly complicated world. Let's get into it. First, as we head into our day here, let's set our minds and our hearts on things that will ground us in our faith. So we're starting with our anchor point. Now, why do we always think that we can fix what isn't broken? We can't just leave it alone. We got to make it brighter, faster, better. It's like if you ever had a recipe and you have the recipe, but you're like, it needs just a little more of this or a little more of that. That's exactly how I was with these beautiful hydrangeas that I bought for the backyard. They were perfect, so healthy. And at some point, I was reading about some fertilizer, which guaranteed to make the colors more bright and vibrant and the blooms more abundant. And I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want. Make them better. So I planted the hydrangeas. I bought the fertilizer. And at first, it was great. It seemed to actually work. It seemed like it was helping the hydrangeas. But then here comes my downfall. I thought, well, if it worked so great the first time, why not a little more? And so I added more and a little bit more. The next day I went outside and I looked at my hydrangeas, which were burned to a crisp. Every single plant was just destroyed. My knowledge gave me a lot of confidence in what I was doing, but it did not give me much wisdom. Isn't that us? We chase and chase after these quick fixes, and we try to enhance what God has already called good. And instead, we say, well, we want to make it better, and we push for results instead of letting time and patience do their work. Here's a little reminder for us. Proverbs 2:6 says, "For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding." Wisdom teaches us when to wait, when to hold back, when to trust that God's timing and design are enough. My hydrangeas, my poor hydrangeas, did not need me to improve them. They just needed me to care and enjoy what was already there. So the next time that we are tempted to overdo it, whether in our gardens, our schedules, or our relationships, stop and ask God, not just for knowledge, but for wisdom. He knows how to grow things pretty well. Women are more likely than men to file for divorce. And can you guess one of the reasons that is the case? Menopause. Yes, the change of life is leading to changes in marriage. And if you are not having those changes in your marriage and your marriage is secure, That might mean that you are stuck with a whole lot of this. I'm just a woman asking for sympathy because a hot flush comes, memory goes, mood is high, then it's low. Every day more hair grows where I don't want any to be. Poor me. Oh, yes, the joy of menopause. I'm not quite there yet. I guess I would be considered perimenopause phase. None of it's fun. But they're calling this whole menopause-related divorce thing menodivorce. Overall divorce rates are dropping, so that's really great, but not in the age of menopause. So for women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, the rate of divorce is going up. And 7 out of 10 women say that menopause is playing a part in that. So what is going on with that? Here's what they say is happening and the science behind it. Menopause is stripping away the buffer or the little extra padding and cushion that we have from our hormones. And so they say that the things that we used to just kind of let roll off our backs and shrug off now feel like huge issues. And so we're now dealing with the mental load, the little comments, the way we feel like we're carrying the weight of the world. All of that now in menopause is louder than it used to be because hormones kind of mask that. We're like, oh, okay, so the trash isn't out, the bills aren't paid, we're okay, life is great. But menopause hits and it's like, no, these things are horrible. Get me out of this situation right now. And women are calling that clarity. Now I have clarity. Now I have awakening to what's true. Here's a clip from Good Morning America breaking this down.
I think menodivorce is this idea that a lot of divorces are happening because of menopause.
Melissa McClure was with her husband for 14 years.
I was so angry. I felt like I wanted to burn the world down. I didn't recognize myself anymore. And therefore, my husband didn't know how to handle me as well.
They've been separated for a year now.
I'm having more clarity now in perimenopause that I'm no longer willing to be a people pleaser. I'm no longer willing to be a nurturer. And I think perimenopause really gave me that clarity. I burned my whole life down and I started again. And I just am so much happier now.
I get what she's saying. I mean, I think we understand the frustrations of wacky hormones and all these things that are going on. I'm 45. Sleep is not what it used to be. I mean, one second I'm hot, then I'm freezing. The tiniest noise will wake me up and then there's just no going back to sleep. And then you add in all of those stressors. Maybe you have aging parents, you have kids going through their own stuff, and you got work and bills, and that so-called buffer that they're talking about, you're just like, oh my gosh, I can't deal with this anymore. Now, perhaps some of that could be seen as a good thing. The older we get, I think it is good that we don't put up with as much nonsense. I look back to my 20s where I was like, I went to all these places like I didn't actually want to go. I said yes to things I didn't want to do. Why did I do that? Hopefully now we've learned to say no. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. But the flip side, we take things to other extremes. So now we're saying, oh, well, I can't tolerate this. This doesn't work for me anymore. So I'm out. I'm out of here. We maybe have parents or in-laws that we don't agree with, or they don't agree with us. So we're just cut them out. They're not going to see the grandkids anymore. Maybe there are parts of our job we don't like, or our boss isn't our best friend. And people are like, well, I'm not putting up with that. You know, I got to love my job. So I quit. And that whole thing gets packaged as protecting our freedom, protecting our peace. That has carried over to our marriages. And listen to this woman. This is a heartbreaking story. She said she was out.
It's amazing. I feel like a different person already. I feel like I can do whatever I want, and I'm not responsible for anybody anymore but me.
I don't know. Things aren't going that great. I just keep thinking about what it used to be like when things were good. And maybe all of this was my fault. Maybe I'm a selfish, narcissistic. Maybe it's me. I don't know, but I'm kind of struggling.
I don't know this woman. I don't know if her story's true, if she's making it up, but it sounds very real, at least the sound of her voice and what she's experienced. I think realizing that divorce is not an out. There was a quote I heard. It said something like, marriage is hard, divorce is hard, choose your hard. Like, they're both hard things. But when we really try to look at what marriage is, it's not just a contract. It's a covenant. Like, it's mutual self-giving, not what benefits me. And if there are things I can't tolerate, see you later. I'll tell you right now, I am not the same person when I got married. Neither is my husband. And some days that's probably a really good thing. And other days it's like, who are you? What in the world is this? And that's all part of marriage. Say you're in your 40s, your 50s, 60s. You've got stuff going on and this season is hitting extra hard. Maybe the question isn't, where is the nearest exit? Okay, we might be feeling that, but can we change that to, what in the world is this? Ask those questions. What is this that I'm dealing with? What is this trial? Start to see it, ask God about it. And then from there, we can have more of a rational point of view to learn how to deal with that trial and stick it out and stay in it. James 1 says that our trials produce perseverance. And let me just say this real quick too. If you are in an unsafe or abusive situation, that's a very different, difficult situation. And I hope that you can get some help and get safe. But I think you know that I'm referring to, I don't want to call them the lighter things. They're still hard things, but hard things don't always mean it's time to bail and time to go. And whatever your situation is, if you are divorced, there's no judgment or shame or to bring up regret. God will take us through everything, wherever we are. And I do believe that wholeheartedly. But just going back to this menodivorce idea, what concerns me is just how casually we're now approaching divorce. And we're making it about these external things. Is like, because divorce isn't about the house or the gray hairs or the challenges with our kids or the bills. It's about us. It's about our brokenness. I walked into the gym. This was so crazy. Walked into the gym, going to one of my fitness classes, and a lot of the women were waiting outside for the class to open up. And I could hear like three or four women talking together and they're going, oh my gosh, congratulations to your daughter. That's so exciting. Tell her when she's in town, we'll take her out. We'll have a celebration. So you hear that. What would you think? Oh, maybe she's pregnant. Maybe she got married. Maybe she's engaged. The woman walks out past me and she goes, congrats on her divorce. I was like, what? Like, why are we celebrating this? And I don't know her story, but I thought, when did we start toasting something that should really, I think, make us grieve? Like the woman sharing her regret over her divorce that was, at first, maybe thought she found some freedom. I think she realized that the freedom that she was looking for was not the absence of an irritating spouse. Freedom is in Christ, who holds us steady in the storm. It's being able to rest in the boat while all the waves are crashing, knowing that Jesus can calm the sea, and we don't have to ever abandon the boat. We don't have to jump ship. So let's not ask, is menopause ruining marriages? Maybe the question for us is, what is this season, this trial, showing us about our patterns and our storms? This story might make you laugh or cry, or maybe a little of both. There's a university in New York City. Students can actually sign up for a class called How to Steal. Yes, that is the real name in the course catalog. And before you picture your kids learning in this class how to steal from the CVS or Walgreens, they say, no, it's not about that. It's not about petty crime. It's more of a academic exploration of the politics and ethics of theft. What a beautiful way to put that. And oh, it'll only cost you $10,000 for this class for stealing lessons. This is straight from their website. I'll read it to you. This field-based seminar explores the politics, ethics, and aesthetics of theft in a world where accumulation is sacred, dispossession is routine, and the line between private property and public good is drawn in blood. Students will critically examine what it means to steal, from whom, for whom, and why, and through site visits and fieldwork in places where capital is hoarded and value is contested, corporate storefronts, grocery chains, museums, libraries, banks, cultural institutions. Those are just some of the field trips that your college student can take if they're signed up for this course. Now, do you want me to keep going? There's actually a little bit more here. They're going to ask questions just so you have a full perspective of this. Is it possible to steal back what was already stolen? They're going to look at that. What does theft look like under capitalism, colonialism, and everyday life? When is theft survival, protest, or care? When is it violence, appropriation, or harm? Students will produce field journals, collective mappings, and speculative strategies for redistributing wealth, knowledge, and beauty.
If you have a job, steal.
Steal.
If you steal. Work for somebody, take from them.
Please do.
Because they're taking from you.
Yeah.
So you take from them.
You take
from
everyone's stealing from somebody. Why not you?
It's the best thing America does.
Yeah.
Is steal.
Steal.
Hearing that, it makes me want to run and sign up for a chemistry class or a very advanced math class. I feel like would be easier to walk through than this class on how to steal. But maybe I'm out of the loop because some say this is a good thing. I had worked in retail out of college and actually during high school and stuff like that. And you run into people that come into the stores and they're obviously stealing. One of the dead giveaways was they would come in with a stroller, except there's no baby in the stroller. It's just filled with bags. And then they fill the bags with merchandise. That was one thing. But we had this one woman who was trying to cash a fraudulent check. And I was the manager on duty at the time. It was for $1,000. And we don't carry that kind of cash in the store. And so you have to get petty cash and so forth. But I talked to corporate and they looked at the check and they said she's already cashed the check, whatever. But they still wanted me to give her the cash. And I thought, this is crazy. This is wrong. Why am I doing this? And they were going to figure things out later. But I had to get her the $1,000 of cash. But being that I wanted to have a little fun with it, I went to, they had the big, one of the machines. You had to kind of go down the hall to get change and so forth. And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to at least make this a little bit more painful for her. And so I got her cash in all $1 bills. And I stuffed it in like a brown paper lunch bag. And I came back into the store with all the ones in the paper bag. And I hand it to the woman and I said, here you go. And she's like, well, what is this? And she's all irritated. I said, that's your cash. And then she looks at it and she's like, it's all ones. I said, yeah, I know. She goes, well, how do I know it's all here? I was like, well, I suggest you count it. And so we sat there in the store counting every single dollar bill. And then she went on her merry way. So that was the best I could do to see that there was some justice in the moment there. But we're seeing more of this. It's just you're seeing more theft, more shoplifting, more car thefts. It's so widespread. Part of the issue, that was back in 2014 when California changed some of the punishments around these type of crimes. It used to be considered a felony, and then anything under $950 was more of a misdemeanor. And so it doesn't take long for people to catch on. They think, oh, well, it's just free merchandise, anything up to $1,000 practically. And of course, since the punishment for the crime was less, theft increased. I just want to know with this class, you finished taking that course. What do you then do with that information and that knowledge? And before I just poo-poo the entire class, I'm not against creative classes, exploring culture and art and music. All of those things have great value. For instance, I love to learn. I love to learn about interesting things, different things. It was just last week or the week before I was in Starbucks and you know how they write on your cup with the Sharpies? for whatever reason, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I wonder how many Sharpies they go through at every store and how many do they go through in all their stores every single year. That's a big investment. They probably go through a ton of Sharpies. I spent more time than I cared to admit looking up how many Sharpies Starbucks buys on an annual basis. And it's around 200,000 Sharpies, which I think is very low given the number of stores they have. But as you can see, I've already spent too much time on this Sharpie story. But I found it interesting. I don't know if I would pay $10,000 for a class on Starbucks Sharpies and the outlook there. But it's fun to know. Maybe the class could kind of be like that. I'd just like to get the bottom of why that class costs $10,000. That's what feels like theft to me. I'll leave us with four words here. Exodus 20, verse 15. You shall not steal. What if your son or daughter could go through school without ever having to get a single vaccine? That's not just a hypothetical anymore. Florida leaders just announced plans to roll back every state vaccine mandate, including for schools. Listen.
Keeping an eye on your world today in Florida, officials announced that the state's Department of Health will work to end all vaccine mandates. Right now, all states allow medical exemptions from school vaccine mandates, and most allow it for religious reasons. Florida schools currently require the MMR, hepatitis B, polio, chickenpox, and several other vaccines. Florida Surgeon General Joseph Laudapo spoke today, saying the government does not have the right to tell citizens what to put in their bodies.
If this passes, Florida would be the first state in the nation to do this. And parents, schools, staff, doctors, everybody's watching this very closely. It's created a bit of a firestorm online. But supporters, including DeSantis, say, hey, this is about parental rights. This is about medical freedom. And critics, on the other hand, say, oh my gosh, okay, we've gotten rid of a lot of diseases. Now we're going to see diseases come back. They're going to have outbreaks. This is kind of crazy. This story hits very close to home for me on a lot of levels. It's kind of bizarre. I used to sell vaccines for like a year. And I'd go in and out of different pediatric offices, hospitals all over Manhattan. And that was a very eye-opening job. It would show me the good that medicine can do. And it also showed me some things that made me very uneasy. So many stories. I will never forget. There was one, this was down kind of near Chinatown. I walked to a gynecologist's office and she had her cat curled up asleep in the exam chair with the stirrups where patients go. And so that one was rather interesting. And then there was another office that I remember seeing all the vaccines that were supposed to be refrigerated, just sitting out on the counter and also going into the arms of patients. So that was also very interesting. So medicine has its flaws, definitely. And we've also seen the benefits. Measles, polio, they're not problems for us today, largely because of vaccines, as far as we know. And I have also lived through the pain of being harmed by medicine. I've had two major incidences in my life from taking something in my health that really turned out to be destructive. One of them, as far as I know, was the COVID vaccine. Just one dose. I had severe pins and needles in my hands and feet, which still go numb from time to time. Right after, I developed muscle twitching, which lasted for a couple months. And now I also have hearing loss and tinnitus that I still have years later because I took that first dose. When was that? I guess in 2021, I think. And it is tough. Praise God, it is a lot better than it used to be, but I still can't sit in silence because the ringing, it throws me into a panic. Like I feel very claustrophobic. Which you can imagine makes my job really interesting because recording really requires a quiet studio. And so when I record or go on air, I usually have something playing quietly on my phone in the background, like a TV show, music, or podcast, just because the extra sound, it breaks up the torment of the ringing in my ears. And so that's how I've kind of tried to make it work. It was so bad when it first happened. And I mean, even my ears felt muffled. It reminded me of like, if you put two cups on your ears and then you hear somebody talk, it's all muffled. That's what I heard on top of ringing. Probably the first time I understood why some people felt like they were done, like they just couldn't go on. It was just, and I had some of the ringing was as loud as like a whistle. It was so bad. So I share all that because I'm personally very glad about what Florida is doing because I'm not opposed to vaccines per se, but I don't believe the government has the right to require us to take vaccines. I just think that's wrong. And for my case, like what really hurt after all of these side effects and talking to my doctor still pressured me to get the second dose. It was horrible. I couldn't even get a note saying it wasn't in my best interest to continue with the series. All of that said, I don't want to see outbreaks of preventable diseases either. That's not good for anybody. So I don't know. We just got a really big conundrum. And while, you know, some are quick to point fingers and call DeSantis irresponsible, I don't think he's the one to blame here. He's responding to a medical industry and medical system that has completely lost trust. We're so skeptical. There was a time we had more confidence in doctors and in our healthcare. But after the way COVID was handled, all the lies and the fraud and the deception and just everything else that went on, why would we trust? I mean, that's where I am and with my personal experiences. And I hate saying that because there are some really great doctors out there. And we have doctors in our own family who care deeply about people's health and their well-being. But right or wrong, just my story, and I'm one of many, I've grown skeptical of the system as a whole. If I'm grateful for anything that came out of COVID, it was just the moment to pause and use discernment. We have to ask what is true, what is right, what is best for us and our families. And we turn to Christ for that wisdom. Science can be wonderful too, but there is no science without a world, and there's no world without Christ. James 1:5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So we'll see how this plays out. At the end of the day, my hope is not in vaccines. It's not in the absence of vaccines or mandates. It's in the Lord who will keep us from all harm. He will watch over our life. And that doesn't mean that bad things will never happen, but it does mean that nothing, not even death, can separate us from his care. He's got us. It's funny how these things show up everywhere, whether it's in our garden, like my hydrangeas that I unfortunately killed, sent to an early grave, or it could be our marriages that, you know, we're ready to bail and we're blaming menopause for it. We've got our health issues, cultural things going on. We're just trying to figure out life and trying to figure out how to do this life here and do it well. And we think that more is better, faster is better, that my way is better. But I don't know if that's wisdom. Wisdom is a little bit different. It listens, it waits, it trusts in God's timing. So here's what I'm thinking for this week. Instead of adding more, faster, better, all of that, what if we actually start subtracting? Little things. If we have a quick comment that we'd like to say online or to someone in person, maybe we don't say it. Maybe we pause for a little bit. Maybe we hold back. If we're in a rush somewhere, maybe we actually cancel those plans that are leaving us too hectic and rushed. And most of all, go back to that wisdom. Ask God for wisdom in those moments where, and they're really all of our moments where we don't know what to do. He'll provide that. We spend a lot of time trying to find the knowledge. We seek after the knowledge to tell us what can be done, right? Oh, how do we do this? What can we do? Wisdom will show us what should be done. There's a difference. And that's where real peace is. And that's where I think our growth begins. Thanks for being here today. We'll talk more in my Facebook group about these stories. If you'd like to join in, head on over to Insight Out Community on Facebook. I will be happy to add you. Maybe you just want prayer. We'll pray for you too. Just let us know how we can be there for you and join in. Until next time, let's go back to that wisdom. Let's choose wisely and live our lives Insight Out. I'll see you next Thursday.